another 4-3 and then in.
Hello and welcome to the YouTube podcast, episode number 13, lucky number 13, talking all things U2, including album news, tour dates, community discussions from the staff of at U2.com. We are live streaming once again. Wednesdays, we live stream out to the world. If you want to pay attention, if you want to listen, goodstuff.fm/live is where you can find us. 8:30 in Saskatoon time. Sherry, what other time zones is that?
Oh, it's 10:30 Eastern, 3:30 a.m. Dublin.
That's an important one. And that lovely voice you're hearing is Sherry is joining us once again for the podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sherry.
Hello, everybody.
You brought your, what, Australian? No.
I haven't a clue.
What was that?
That was Bostralian. That was a combination of Boston and Australia. It's a very unique.
I'm so
unique,
jacked up on caffeine right now.
It's a unique dialect.
And Matt, you're back for the show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. How are you? I was just thinking while you were talking, shouldn't we skip episode 13? It's kind of unlucky, like they do with hotels and all that sort of stuff.
No, Adam was born on the 13th. It's all good.
Yeah, there you go. What other, since everybody knows us already on this show, by now, if this is your first show, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us. But Matt and Sherry and myself should be fairly familiar voices to you. Matt had the idea of having a little confessional of some sort. But instead of just telling you about our U2 interests, like we usually do for new guests, so Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's something interesting about you related to U2 that people might not know?
Wow, I'm terrible with song lyrics. How's that? Like I could not. If you asked me to recite a song lyric right now, I could not do it. Maybe some of the songs I could, but if you were to pick like a somewhat non-popular U2 song, I could not even start the song lyrics.
Okay. Well, that's actually a good teaser for what we're going to do a little later on in the show. So,
Great. Volcano's terrible.
We might have a little, a little,
like, I have no idea what the first line of the song Volcano.
How about this one?
I know, right. Everybody knows that. Okay. So that's a hugely popular song. So that I should be able
should
to, if you quizzed me, I should be able to recite the lyrics to that. But okay. Volcano, no, I could not tell you the lyrics to Volcano.
Okay, Sherry, how about you? What's the interesting fact about you?
Oh, my goodness. Related to you, too. I worked local crew back in 1992 at Foxborough Stadium for outside broadcast. And I stickered up about 50 or 60 bumper stickers that said, "I love the Dalton brothers backstage."
Wait, the whole sentence was, "I love the Dalton brothers backstage," or you?
It was a bumper sticker that had, "I heart the Dalton
brothers." Okay, I thought. Okay.
And I slapped them on almost anything and everything backstage at the venue for the U2 outside broadcast Zoo TV tour date back in August of 92.
Okay, because whole sentence.
I don't think I've ever shared that with anybody.
Right. The whole sentence kind of sounds like more of a confession than maybe you were planning to.
Well, you know, I get to the Zoo TV confessional to say, "Forgive me, Bono, for I have sinned. I stickered up your backstage."
All right. And I was trying to think of on the spot because I'm terrible at this, but I'm somewhere in between, like with what Matt said, as far as like I have really good recall of a song and lyric and even playing guitar along to a song, but then random, like just complete U2 brain farts or whatever, as far as remembering something that should be really obvious. And that's probably fairly plain to see for people who pay attention to the podcast as I stumble over words and trying to remember random facts on the spot that other folks like Sherry seem to do a much better job of. So, but I'll blame my kids because they always exhaust me right before we record this podcast, getting them to bed. But tonight they were good. So there we go. I won't throw my kids under the bus in this episode. Shall we, before
save
I confess.
Save that for the next episode. Yeah,
exactly.
Save it for the podcast, Chris.
Shall we move on before I alienate my entire family on this podcast to our inbox? Now, I came back from preparing for the show to about 16 paragraphs of conversation in our documents, which normally is just a quick question and then we talk about it on the show. But Sherry and Matt have gone back and forth with an essay here, it looks like. So I'm just going to turn the show over to Sherry or Matt, whoever wants to take the lead here.
Chris, you remember I promised in the last episode that I would find the answer to the question, how have order of songs on CDs correlate to how popular songs have been and if they are played in concert. And I forget which listener had sent that because I don't have last week's show notes in front of me, but I have somewhat of an answer. But then Matt came in with a point counterpoint. So that was fun.
So here's the point in the podcast where we just read to you what we argued about in Google Docs earlier today.
Well, so I was wondering if I should just
really
do like
a
dramatic
right
reinterpretation of your writing here. But no, so Sherry, we'll start with you. And
I reached out to our buddy Axe over at u2gigs.com because they live and breathe this type of data mining and digging deep into this type of stuff. And so using the Joshua Tree as an example, and this is off of their website as well. Looking at the Joshua Tree, the album had remarkably lopsided live representation. Songs from the first side of the Joshua Tree have been performed at the time of this publication over 3,000 times. The songs from the second side only claim to be performed 372 times. The only song from the first side that has not been played more times than the entirety of the second side is Running to Stand Still, but it's only 27 performances shy of that mark. So you can tell they really dive into the statistics on this. Axe did put a little footnote to say it's worth noting the vast majority of songs never played live are from the second half of the album. Off the top of his head, Drowning Man, Promenade, and 4th of July are the exceptions. So this is where Matt started typing in after I started typing. So this is where it gets fun. Go ahead, Matt.
What, you want me to just like read what I said? You know what else I don't like?
The order of songs.
There is no chance on earth that the order of the songs on U2 albums has any impact on whether a song gets played in concert. If whatever the data shows, it's just pure coincidence. There's no way that they have an idea when they are sequencing an album. They have there's no way they've even started to think about, you know, the tour that starts, you know, 8 months from then. It's just, no.
But what about singles, though? You look at the first three singles off of the album. So Joshua Tree, the first three singles were on the first side. Unforgettable Fire, the first three singles of that album were off, side A.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second, Sherry?
Go ahead.
I'll ask for the under 30 something crowd. What do you mean by sides?
Oh, back in the day, there were these big 12-inch plasticky things called vinyl records. And so side, or if you were more inclined, you could have this little plastic box type thingy that was called a cassette. And so each side could only have so many songs on it. So once you had five or six songs, you'd have to flip from one side to the other. So you'd have side A or side B.
Okay, gotcha.
So that's what is meant by sides. So you look at the albums and the first couple singles off of the album, and chances are in a live setting, they're going to play the singles that have been released from that album. And the majority of those singles have been from side one or side A. So I would think that the band would be more inclined to be playing the first few songs off of the album, because back then people wouldn't fast forward through to say, you know what, I'm going to skip these songs. So that's why I think that those types of songs in general in the live setting are more apt to be performed because more people are more familiar with them.
Well, yeah, so I'm not going to argue with that, but that's like, are we discussing whether a song is on side A or side B versus what I think the question was the actual order of the songs and how does that correlate to whether a song is played in concert and all that sort of stuff. So I'm thinking more specific than whether something is just on side A or side B, because yes, U2 has historically put their singles, most of them, on side A, you know, back in the day when sides mattered. But if we're like getting, and again, I missed this original question, but if the person is asking, you know, does it matter, you know, like if a song is number two on an album, is it more likely to get played in concert? You know, if that's the case, I think that's just pure coincidence.
That when they have their theme that they're trying to promote, you know, I don't think that they're going to look at their discography and go, oh, well, gee, you know, that's the third song off of that particular side. Are we going to play it? Well, does it match what we're trying to say? And I think that that's also where things like YouTube request kind of don't take that into consideration. Mm-hmm. That even though it is a song that we would really like to hear live, it's not going to jive with what the band is trying to do in this particular live venue.
Yeah, that's where U2GW in the chat room mentions, kind of going off what you guys were saying too, as far as when you get up to around Actung Baby, it starts to change because they don't really need to worry about order sides as much. And especially now in this day and age, there isn't sides and they don't pick sides anymore, as it were, on the records, if that's what we call them anymore. All right, are we good? Can we move on? Is that?
Yeah, I think we're good with that one.
You guys are at peace?
We are now at peace.
Do we want to bring up New York versus any other?
No. It's all good. It's all good.
Getting on to other questions, not real questions, but current questions. At Steve Dozas asks, what time do the band usually turn up at the venue? Whoa, someone just deleted. What time does the band usually turn up at the venues to meet the fans before a show and things like that?
It's been averaging around 2 in the afternoon. At least that was what it was in the US. I've been watching the Twitter feed with the hashtag of U2IE tour, and that still seems to be about the same time overseas. I'm not sure about Barcelona because that concert time is so much later than the other venues, if that's also been delayed by an extra hour or so. But I would venture to guess that if you got there around, like, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you would be able to queue up with everybody else. People will normally go and get their GA number and then head over to where the band would be entering in with the hopes that they could get their picture, autograph, or their song request to a particular band member.
And I feel like we've discussed this maybe in a previous episode, but probably the logical follow-up would be like advice for if you do want to get something signed or a picture taken with a member of the band, any tips or tricks or life hacks, whatever, YouTube hacks.
Have a Sharpie available.
Because
what will sometimes happen is Bono will grab one person's Sharpie and walk the line down. And if it's your Sharpie that he grabbed and Edge is coming, you now do not have something to write with. So always have multiple Sharpies at your disposal.
There's a good title. cool. Next question. Second question from Steve Doza actually as well. Is will you two ever perform Acrobat on this tour?
You have to answer that again.
Thanks, Larry.
That's what I was just going to say. The answer is the same. No,
which,
they will not.
Yeah, we don't think so. There's been video of Bono getting the request from somebody and kind of, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or whatever. But yeah, definitely doesn't seem like they are keen to perform that song on this tour. So
if they didn't do it in Berlin, I'm not expecting it to be on this tour.
Right. Final one from at Nathan Rufo. Have you ever gone through a period where you're sick of U2, taking a U2 hiatus? Are there songs you don't even dare listen to anymore?
Volcano's terrible. You know what else I don't like? Here we go. Just replay that whole podcast right now. Just insert it.
Matt, how about you?
This is where the whole mirage falls apart because this happens to me all the time. constantly I get like the number. If you were to open up my iTunes, there's no visual element here on our podcast, but if I were to open up my iTunes right now, the most popular playlist that I have in iTunes is my No U2 playlist. That's what I listen to during the day. And so, yeah, I constantly go through this, and I constantly take U2 hiatuses. And you know when it really hit me, too, when I was working on U2 A Diary in 2006, 7, or 8 or so, because I would work, you know, a regular day and then get home, eat dinner, and then be on the computer like for 5 or 6 hours nonstop working on the book and just, you know, living – you know, every little detail of U2's life to, you know, to write the book, and just absolutely got sick of U2 in the process of writing that book and could not listen to them. And that lasted, you know, for a good portion of the research and writing of the book. And then probably a few months afterwards that I just wanted nothing to do with U2 and the music, because I had to get like so, you know, every night so into this, the book that I was writing, that it was just like, ugh, I don't want to hear them right now. So yeah, that happens to me all the time. And I have to be very, like leading up to Vancouver, I made sure not to listen to them until about probably mid-April, you know, probably a month or so before the tour started is when I started listening to the songs again and listening to, you know, old concerts and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I very much have to plan it.
How about you, Sherry?
Parenthood will definitely put the kibosh on listening to anything that you really want to listen to for a period of years. I was fortunate in that my children liked the children's albums from Bare Naked Ladies and from They Might Be Giants. So, yeah, there was about a 3-year period where our favorite songs were not U2. and I will say that there are certain albums that I'll take out once in a blue moon, like War. That is not an album that really resonated with me. I know it's Tasula's favorite album, but it's one that I really couldn't connect with, and I still don't connect with very often. But I prefer to listen to anything live. So I will go into my CD collection and pull out some of the live albums or some of the live recordings that I've traded for over the years, and I'll pop in a good Pop Mart show or, you know, a good Lovetown tour. And the Lovetown tour recordings are some of my favorites, because those were the ones that I first got into U2 fandom with. So I've got a lot of really good memories with those. But, you know, when it's not a tour year, I will start going back to some of the artists who I got into before I got into U2, and I'll re-explore them. Then I'll come back, and it's a nice give and take. You know, it's sort of like a family reunion. You're happy when the family first shows up, but you're also happy to send them away for a little bit. And I think it's healthy to take a U2 hiatus every so often.
I agree. Chris, do you go through?
Yeah, I certainly do, and I can definitely identify with kids being a big factor in part of that. And it happened to line up for me with the release of No Line on the Horizon, which wasn't like isn't one of my favorite albums, and so it kind of just all culminated in kids' album that I wasn't super into, and then less music, less U2 being played. But just recently now, like my kids are a little older, and they put up with different music, and but they're not old enough that they want their own music. Occasionally, but that's coming. And so I'm in this kind of new period again where, you know, a new album came out and it happened to be more my style, and my kids are happy to listen to it and aren't complaining and asking for something else, with animated turtles or something on it or whatever. So, but I can certainly identify with too, like there's just albums that aren't really in my iTunes, or whatever, that probably if I look back at stats and stuff, like something like October and, Yeah, Boy even too probably would be definitely less listened to in terms of stats and how often I go back to that. But if they come up, like you said, Sherry, on like a live album or something that I have, I'm still happy to listen to it. It doesn't turn me off that way. But yeah, so I think it's healthy too. It's okay.
I agree. It's totally healthy. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay to say, you know, I'm not going to listen to them for a week or so. That doesn't make you less of a fan.
Yeah. And alternatively, if all you ever listen to is YouTube, that's fine too. That's perfectly awesome. The benefit of a band being around this long now is there's enough music there that you could theoretically be listening to it all the time and not have to repeat. I don't know what the number would be, but
right. Yeah, that's true.
Be going for a while. So, cool. Well, that was all the questions we had for this week on the Ask at U2 hashtag. Be sure to send in your questions, comments for the show using the hashtag Ask at U2 on Twitter, and we'll grab those and use them in future shows. Moving on, we've got, instead of our Stump Matt segment, I thought we'd flip it up a little bit, and we're going to do, we'll Stump Matt and Sherry, I guess, is maybe what we'll do this time with a little bit of a Name That Song segment, we'll call it. And hopefully it's enough of a tease. So what we're going to do is basically I'm going to play a clip of a song, and Sherry and Matt, I don't know how you guys can shout out, I guess, maybe when you know the song name, whoever does it first. And we'll see. I don't know how many we'll go through here. I have a whole bunch, but we'll see how many we get through, how long it takes here. And someone, maybe in the chat room, somebody can tabulate the score as we go along here for me. Those in the chat room can play along too, of course, but Matt and Sherry, well, actually it won't help them because there's a delay, so the chat room will be a little bit behind. Unless Matt and Sherry are really stumped, then
the chat room then they'll be right in time with us. Yeah, if it takes us 30 seconds. So yeah,
all right, we'll go. Let's see.
Are these all gonna be U2 songs, or are you gonna be like busting out?
No. Okay. That's a good idea. I should just throw in some random other,
you know, like if it's Lana Del Rey or something. I don't know, I couldn't name one single song of hers or his or
Betty Wap.
What's that one?
Breaking Bad.
There you go. Sherry wins the test. That was just a test.
You know what? I have never seen Breaking Bad. I've never seen a single episode of that show.
There's a good alternative episode discussion of other media we watch and don't watch.
That's another YouTube fan confession.
You know what else I don't watch?
You know what else I don't like?
Okay, so just trying to decide whether I go. Okay, we'll start with this one. Okay, ready? You guys ready? Okay.
Levitate. No, I have no idea what that is.
So
I have no idea.
They're going to be like, sometimes they'll have words, sometimes they won't.
Is that Live?
Oh, that's the end of Until the End of World.
Yes, I think you're right.
Where am I?
That's the end.
Oh, no, it's not.
See, I was just going to check the chat room. That's what everybody, Until the End of the World too. It sounds very similar now. It's actually Acrobat. I thought I'd throw that one in there just to appease the Acrobat fans.
That was what?
That was cruel. That was so cruel. No.
Okay, nope, next one. Next one.
I know that song. I don't think that's how you want me to do this.
Sherry, any idea?
Yeah, Twilight. You two GW beat us in the chat. We're terrible. Man, we're terrible.
Another Time, Another Place actually is the correct answer.
Oh, really?
Okay, next one. Oh, this one I think is going to be easy. You're going to get this one pretty quick.
Beautiful day. Yes, I win. Yes.
You both had that pretty quick. I don't know who was first there. That went right. Might have to go back to the slow motion replay, but we'll do that afterwards. So you both get a point, we'll say. Okay, next one coming up.
Oh.
Electrical Storm?
No. It's from No Line on the Horizon. No. What was that song?
Oh. Yeah.
What is that? Come on.
Chat room's got it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fez, isn't it?
Okay, chat room gets a point.
Man, the chat room is kicking our butt.
<That's>... Okay, here's the next one. We'll go on.
I Need Your Love, Hawkman 269.
Oh, there you go. Sherry didn't even enter on that one. Matt was so fast. Okay, next one.
This is awful. I threw a brick.
There we go. Did you cheat? You cheated.
I could sing it.
No, I'm trying to, I wish we had video cameras for this because my, what are you laughing at?
I am laughing.
My CD collection is like, it's like, you know.
You're like reaching for it and like.
Yes. It's like just, it's like 2 inches out of my reach. And if I won't take, I'd have to take my headphones off and then I wouldn't be able to hear anything.
Okay. We'll do two more. This is fine, right? Cool. This is good. Okay.
Yeah, this is great.
Okay. Sherry, you ready?
No, but go ahead.
Doesn't matter if I'm ready. Why are you just asking Sherry? That's that song.
If God would send his angels.
There you go.
Yes.
Sherry's
in it.
That's
the one. That's the one.
Yeah, that's a song. All right. This is actually, see, I was telling you earlier, this coincides with your confessional of not being able to recall U2 lyrics like some U2 fans. Okay. Last one, and then we'll do one more bonus round one. Ready?
Red light. No, not red light. That's it. I'm putting my headphones down. I'm getting my CD. Hold on.
Let's see if you can get it before the chat room does. Yeah, U2GW's got it.
Yep.
Chat room wins again. So is it
too hard?
Is it just recalling the title, Matt? That's, or like, or are you like actually going to spin up the CD and try?
No. I got this. It's just recalling the title. I got the first three CDs in front of me now.
Okay.
So, I'm standing up at my desk.
Okay,
so
don't look at the chat room. So you want to hear it again?
Oh, like a song?
Oh, yeah. Okay, and here's one bonus round. If Matt gets this one, he can win. Let me just see. Where is it here?
That's like a pity thing right there. When the church is oh, no, that's awful. That's the worst song of all time.
Sleep like a baby tonight. When the church is
I'm going to take my headphones off now and not put them back on. You're so mean.
I was just testing to see if you actually ever listened to the song or not. So
I'm going to have to put my CDs back now. I have the boy CD that came in the fold out cardboard case, by the way.
Oh, wow.
That's really old.
You should Instagram that or something so people can see it. If they haven't. Okay. Well, that was fun. That was a good segment. I think we'll try and do it again.
That was a good segment. Yeah. The lawyers will be after us next week. That's okay.
I've heard like rumors of, you know, it's this certain length of a song or whatever. So all right. Bono, go easy on this.
I have to listen to the first three albums a bit more this week.
I tried to grab one song from each album as I went through, but we'll save some for.
You didn't have anything off of Unforgettable Fire.
Well, no, I haven't. We didn't get through that all yet. There's more that I had, but
he's got more. It's for next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you do this?
Moving on. The U2 roundtable.
Yes, please. Let's move on. Let's please move on.
Where we pick a discussion, a topic, a couple things that we want to talk about, and debate them, and argue, and discuss them to death. Not unlike the first half of the podcast, but we just call this a different name. So briefly, maybe, or I don't know how much we want to discuss this one, but it's something we forgot to mention last episode, I think, on the official podcast. We talked about it after the show. So if you are keen on the podcast and tune in live when we record live Wednesday nights at 8:30 and whatever time it is in your world, we sometimes chat after the show is done. And Sherry, or I can't remember who it was, reminded us that Rock Band 4 was announced and is adding some U2 songs. Cedarwood Road, and I forgot to look the other
one. I Will Follow.
I Will Follow, right. There's my piece of trivia that I wouldn't have gotten. And first of all, I guess, have you guys played Rock Band in any form, period? Matt, have you? Or Sherry?
Yes, I have. We used to, here's the story, the funny story is that we used to have Rock Band, and we had the whole beads and all the gear with the guitar and the keyboard and the drums and everything and the microphone, and I played, my son played, my wife even played. And then once it became obvious that the, you know, the whole music game thing was sort of like dying out and that there wasn't going to be a U2 game after all, we sold our Rock Band gear. And so now we have no Rock Band gear, and now they're coming out with U2 Rock Band songs. So there you go. That's how it rolls, I guess.
Yeah, and that's we have an older, I don't remember which one, Rock Band 3 or actually no, it was the Beatles Rock Band actually. This one, and but unfortunately, like we figured out last time, this edition is only for the new PlayStation 4, Xbox One platforms. So, which
yeah, we've got the Wii and the Wii U, and we do have Rock Band stuff that the rest of the family plays on. We got the Beatles and a couple others, but when I discovered that there's no Wii version of this game, I just was like, well, what?
Yeah.
How could they totally miss one whole segment of suburban moms? I mean, that just stinks. You know, I already crank out to Cedarwood Road with my air guitar. Now I can't do it with my Wii guitar. It just stinks.
Yeah. I'm guessing on the technical side, the Wii U is a little underpowered for maybe what they're trying to accomplish with it. That's what I know with other games, it's sort of that way. But it is too bad that they don't have one out for that, because that would be probably the perfect storm of people, like you said, who have the Wii U and would play Rock Band as a family or whatever, whether U2's on it or not. But we'll see. I don't know if, I guess you out there as fans, would you be buying, like it basically would be a, what, $300 some console that you'd have to buy, and then the Rock Band 4, which is probably $60 to $100 or whatever it'll be. Would it be worth buying just to be able to rock out to U2 with Rock Band or not?
They haven't said how many total U2 songs will be available, have they?
No, they did say that additional U2 songs will be available for download after the game launches. There's going to be something like 1,500 songs combined between all of the different artists that are participating in it. And there will be additional U2 songs in there.
See, yeah. They need to be more specific, because additional U2 songs could be two or it could be 50.
Yeah.
And if it's 50, I might be more inclined to, you know, spend a little money. But if it's, you know, if there's only going to be like five U2 songs total, then, you know, forget it.
Yeah. It'll probably be like downloadable content. You buy a pack of U2 songs like for $3 or $5 or whatever. And if memory serves, it was like in the past for...
They'll magically appear in your Xbox one day.
Exactly.
Somebody delete these songs off of here. I don't want them.
Oops.
Exactly. So... But yeah, I don't think they'll do that this time, but it would be nice. That would be a nice little treat for us U2 fans. But it would actually be funny in an ironic kind of way if whoever, Microsoft or whoever's behind that, could convince the band to do that. But I don't see it happening.
Now, okay. I do have a question, though. Because they are putting Cedarwood Road on there, do you think that's going to be the next single off the album?
Yeah, which... You would think it kind of would be. Like, I know when we were talking about last week after the show, I felt as like it's a good choice from a musical standpoint, but also from a, like, lyrically, it feels like a bit of a heavy song to be like, you know, just rocking out with your family to the living room. But so maybe there is more marketing push behind it than just pick the good rock song, one of the good rock songs off the album, and throw it on.
Well, and it makes sense that they might push a new single out around the time of the Paris stuff on HBO. It, you know, it'd probably be to their benefit to have something new for radio stations to play. So, yeah, I think there could be something to that. That's an interesting idea.
And what's also interesting about the HBO thing that you just pointed out, all of the social media push right now has been for the concert on the 14th. But there's been very little said about the documentary that's going to be on the 7th. And I'm wondering why they're not plugging both.
Because I think the only people that are going to watch the documentary are U2 nutters like us. I don't think Joe, music fan, is going to bother tuning in for a documentary, but they may tune in for a concert.
Oops.
Okay, we'll drop back in right around here. So I was actually looking on the fantastictours.atu2.com just to see the dates and the stuff for the show, because the HBO special airs
on the 14th, right. And that is going to be night three of the four nights in Paris, and that is supposed to be the actual show on the 14th with a slight time delay. So they'll have about 5 hours, give or take, in post-production to get it uploaded and sent across to the satellites over to HBO in order to broadcast. So we will all have listened to it on Mixlr or we would have seen it on Periscope. So I'll be very interested in seeing if it truly is the full show or if they've somehow magically melded the first three nights together, because they are U2 and they do that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I could see them having, like, after the first two nights, having a version ready to go in case the show is just like something, you know, horrible goes wrong, or
right,
Edge breaks a guitar string or something, or someone's sick or whatever. Like, they have a couple of days after the first two shows to get that kind of thing together anyways.
Well, you mentioned Edge breaking a guitar string. If you look back at the Elevation DVD Live from Boston, the night one, Edge's guitar string broke what song was it?
Gone.
And he went mental. I was at that show. I've never seen Edge want to destroy a guitar in the way that he actually did on stage. And that part made it into the DVD, but other songs were not from night one as part of the Boston DVD. It was a meld of multiple nights. So it wasn't one complete show.
That's interesting. If I'd heard that, I forgot about that story, but that's interesting that they would still include that then. I'll have to go back and rewatch that show.
But. Yeah, there's a couple points in the Boston DVD where you can see noticeably, you know, like Bono's hair is different from one cut to the next, and so you can kind of gives it away that it's different nights. And the same thing with the Slane DVD, especially during Streets. If you just watch Bono, there's some shots where, you know, they show him 1 minute behind and he's got his arms, you know, spread out wide. And then the next cut, you know, he's got his arms together inside. And it's, so there's just a few little things. If you're a real train spotter, I guess would be the term that they use for those of us that look that deeply at things. you can kind of tell that they.
Yeah.
They,
Chicago 2005, similar thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think is fair. And that's a whole nother discussion as far as whether that's like a legit thing or not to do, and whether you're air quotes allowed to or not. But I think, you know, in the interest of providing a video that documents that tour, you kind of want to put your best foot forward with it. And, you know, if there is a song that kind of falls flat one night but then works better the other night, might as well. I think that's fair play. So folks in the chat room are listing off some other music documentaries and things that to sort of reference, I guess. And I thought I'd just mention there's a site called Letterboxd that's sort of like for tracking your movies that you've watched or movies you want to watch. And I put together a list with some friends potentially to do for a podcast. I have never got around to it, but of music documentaries worth watching or checking out. And and just as a complete aside, it's I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And feel free to send me suggestions of other music documentaries that aren't on the list that I've forgotten about. It's a whole sort of subgenre of, obviously, of documentaries and stuff that, if you're a music nerd at all, is kind of fun, even if you don't love the band that it happens to be about. So there you go. I feel like we've had bigger discussions about everything, and we were supposed to get to our main topic yet of, well, no, that's not true. We had a little bit of a longer preamble this time that isn't in the show. So pros and cons, topic of pros and cons of not having opening acts on this tour. And it is something I know we discussed sort of a bit beforehand, and whether they might do something different in Europe. Obviously they haven't. And I guess for somebody who hasn't been at a show myself, it obviously doesn't affect me at all, but it is kind of, I can understand how even just a different vibe and a different, audience sort of participation thing, where everybody there is there for you too. There isn't any chance of like, Arcade Fire fans, for example. That's who last tour when I saw them, Arcade Fire open, or second last tour, Arcade Fire open. And so obviously there's a whole bunch of people who potentially would be there who maybe like you too, but are also there because they really love Arcade Fire, et cetera, on down through the history of opening acts they've had. Matt, how do you think it's sort of played out in terms of being a good thing, bad thing for the tour?
It's, you know, the point you just made, I think, is one of the big positives for it, because you mentioned Arcade Fire. I was going to say the same thing about Muse on the 360 tour. When the very first leg, when Muse opened for them, I saw them, Giant Stadium in New Jersey with my son, the two shows there. And there were just hundreds and hundreds of Muse fans that came to the show specifically to see Muse. And later on the 360 tour, when it was Australia, New Zealand, I believe, is that where they had Jay-Z opening some of the shows? I remember seeing, just tons and tons of tweets from people saying, you know, going to U2 tonight, but the only reason I'm going is to see Jay-Z. I'm going to leave after Jay-Z. And so, yeah, just it's, I think that's one of the real positives, is that, you know, U2, you know, you guarantee you get your own audience and not somebody else's audience. So I think, you know, going into the tour, I was a little, you know, just, I was like curious, like, what's it going to be like, the vibe in the building with no opening act, and, you know, so how are they going to build up that excitement? But, you know, I don't think that, you know, from my perspective, at least, I don't think that was ever really an issue, because just the excitement of being in the building and knowing that the show, you know, that U2 is going to be on, you know, that sort of just developed its own excitement for me. And I guess, you know, the other thing, I guess the only downside is that, you know, there's a few opening acts that, you know, U2 has kind of introduced me to that I've, you know, that I learned to like and listen to. And so, you know, I guess selfishly as a music fan, I'm wondering, you know, what could there have been an opening act that I might have never heard of before, and, you know, found a new band that I liked. That to me is probably the only downside of it. But
they haven't played longer as a result, or like, it's not like you're getting more U2 and less of some.
They
band.
Are playing longer on this tour.
Yeah,
yeah, a little bit. It's I mean, I think the 360 tour was usually about 2 or 2:10, and this is usually about 2:15 or 2:25, yeah, somewhere in there. So it's an extra, you know, an extra 10 minutes or so.
Yeah. How about you, Sherry? What are your thoughts on the opening?
Well, after seeing so many different opening acts from 92 onward, I am very happy not to have one on this tour, for the reasons that have already been said, but also because it for this particular tour, with the technology and with everything that is designed specifically for U2, I couldn't see them allowing another artist up there. So for this particular design of a tour, I think that an opening act would have detracted from it, because the opening act for this tour is the PA music. It is the pre-show mix that they're playing to set the mood, to set the tone, to get everybody understanding what U2's background is, what inspired them, what's inspiring them now. You know, some nights you'll have a nice mix of the 70s and very early 80s music. Other nights you'll have some 90s thrown in as well. For the tours that I did see with an opening act, there were some artists like Matt mentioned. I mean, I was introduced to Snow Patrol, and I absolutely love them now because I got to see them perform before U2 took the stage. But then there are other artists that we saw, Damian Marley, you know, we had Kanye West, we had Black Eyed Peas, we had the Pixies, we had the Bodines, we had Lone Justice, we had PJ Harvey, we had a whole Pixies, you know, we had a slew of other people.
Did you not like any of them?
They were okay, but when for the Vertigo tour, that was the one that I went and saw 25 shows in a very short period of time. I was living the dream of having a well-paying job and no children. So I didn't need to see Damian Marley the amount of times that I saw him. once was enough. But then again, most people only go to one show, and that's fine. But it was really interesting. When we were out in Portland for the end of that third leg of the Vertigo tour, and Rocco took the stage, Rocco Reedy, he took the stage to introduce Kanye, and the introduction was something along the lines of, he is an inspiration to you too, and we believe that he will be an inspiration to you. So you that harkened back to a few of the other interviews that I had read over the years, where they wanted to have an opening act that they not only could stand behind, but had influenced them, or that had inspired them, you know. So thinking back to groups like the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy, who opened for broadcast. Go ahead.
Hypocrisy. There you go.
Thank you.
Wow.
You know, they were one of the ones that actually had the song, what was it, Television, the Drug of the Nation, Breathing Ignorance and Feeding Radiation TV, and I could keep going on with the rap. But that was, you know, one of the inspirations behind the whole Zoo TV thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they were bringing in the artists who were influencing them. And that was helpful to me to get to understand the musical path that they were taking. You know, some people questioned the Black Eyed Peas, but, you know, truth be told, the band liked them, you know?
That doesn't mean I want to listen to them. Yeah, you know what else I don't like? The Black Eyed Peas.
That's a real Zoo TV moment.
Well, I think you know, in terms of, I mean, I agree with what Sherry said. I think that the opening acts that they had on Zoo TV were probably the best they've ever had in terms of the opening act setting up the show that U2 was about to put on. I think it was really, I mean, it was just... I just worship at Zoo TV's altar. So there's like anything, like every, like that whole thing was just such a perfect combination of, from start to finish, of visuals and sound and message and all this sort of thing. And so I think, you know, so I certainly agree with that, you know, even though that's not my style of music and I didn't know, you know, their songs and all this sort of stuff, it was just having them as the opening act for Zoo TV was just fantastic.
Plus,
so,
it was,
yeah,
the Sugar Cubes too.
Well, you know, when it went over into Europe, it had, you know, they had different opening acts in Europe, and you know, they've done that pretty constantly. But I don't know. I mean, they've had some dodgy opening acts over the years, and you know, Black Eyed Peas being one. I think there was probably Kanye West was. I thought it was interesting too. And you're right. I'd totally forgotten that they actually had to come out and sort of make a statement before Kanye West came on stage about why he was the opening act. I totally forgot about that, but you're right.
Yeah.
But I mean, for my money, yeah, okay, your husband just said it in the chat. Smash Mouth was really the worst opening act they've ever had. as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that was Pop Mart Seattle was the show that I saw. And it was just completely unlistenable and unwatchable. And I don't think I've ever, I mean, I always try to be respectful of the opening act, whether I like them or not, but I think I probably did lose it that night of Pop Mart Seattle, and I would think I was being very disrespectful.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to be in, just like opening band thing, especially with a band like U2, but it is interesting how they've gone back and forth from like intentionally, it feels like fairly intentional about who they would choose and why, and then other times, like you said, you know, Smash Mouth or whatever, like just picking random popular band at the time maybe, or you know, trying to just sort of bring in the young crowd, so to speak, to the show or something, you know, and yeah. So I've gotten fairly lucky with who I've saw. Like I said, Arcade Fire in Montreal, which is Arcade Fire's hometown. It was kind of like a cool double whammy of those two bands or whatever, and Arcade Fire joining U2 at the end on stage and stuff, and a fun thing like that. But it's Fun Loving Criminals was the band I saw in Edmonton that opened for them.
Oh, yeah.
Which were...
Pop Mart.
Yeah, Pop Mart. And I couldn't say good or bad. I don't know. It was my first show, so I was kind of overwhelmed with everything at the time. Pop Mart being a first show is pretty overwhelming as it is. And then I forget who it was on 360 that was in... It was Edmonton again that I saw them, but I think it was a Canadian band, I want to say, but a younger band that I didn't really get into or wasn't too keen on or whatever. And the crowd wasn't like super into it either, so I didn't feel bad for not knowing.
No, I know I am totally in the minority, but I was thrilled when the Corrs opened for them in Sunrise for the start of the Elevation tour. That was very much a last minute call. But I was thrilled about that.
Oh, that'd be good.
And
yeah.
I know I'm in the minority on that. Or,
I guess just like not at all sort of a rock band at all. And so people were disappointed because of that. Is that the vibe?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But you know, they're from Ireland. So I was thrilled to have an all Irish show that night.
Yeah. Yeah. You wonder if, like, you know, in a fantasy land where the Ramones are still touring for some reason, and, you know, would they bring them on as an opening act if that was happening, like if they were still around and, you know, just with a theme of this tour or whatever. And sort of like,
well,
what
they brought for Zoo TV, they had big Audio Dynamite too. So, you know, they did have Mick Jones, who was part of the Clash, come and be an opener, you know. So they have done something similar.
Yeah. Caleb in the chat room says, but no Stars Go Blue Bono cameo. That's at the show, right? Yeah. That actually, I really like that song.
No, there wasn't a Bono cameo and he was at the show. He should remember.
You guys can argue about that after the show.
Yeah.
Isn't he in the other room? So
he's a few floors above me right now.
Okay. In the Sherry Mansion. Okay. Well, I think we've exhausted this, but I am curious about fans who listen to the show and who've been to U2 shows. Tweet us with your favorite or not so, like, you can maybe tweet fave and your favorite opening act and your non-fave opening act, if that makes, I think that makes sense. And use the hashtag #AskAtU2 and we'll grab that and read a few on the next episode. Cause obviously everybody has different tastes in music, like we talked about earlier, and just curious what different folks think of different opening acts and maybe there's some that we've forgotten and maybe you were at a really early show or something, someone out in Ireland or over in Europe somewhere that saw a band that opened for U2 that we've completely missed or forgot about. And your thoughts on whether you wish they did have a opening back act on this tour or not. So, cool. Let's wrap up the roundtable and talk about what's coming up next on with the podcast. We've mentioned a couple times the U2 bucket list items, things that you want to do, see, try related to U2 in some vague fashion. You can send those in. We've had a bunch of folks sending them in already if you email it to webmaster@u2.com. Audio, if you want to record some audio and send it in, a YouTube video, whatever, and we'll capture the audio and throw it in the show, or just an email with some items listed. Any other comments there, Matt, related to the bucket list?
No, we've got a half dozen emails already, and so, you know, we can share those with our own bucket list items next week. And like as you were just saying, I'd love if some folks wanted to send some audio or something in, and we'll just we'll give you more work that way, and give you something else to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you love playing audio clips during the podcast. So
totally,
it's a jive moment.
Or any U2 collectibles you want to own? Like if there's something, I don't know about you guys. The collectibles thing has sort of gotten away. I've gotten less interested in that with the whole digital stuff, but I'm sure there are fans out there who still desperately want to get every single album in a certain format or things like that. Or pictures of your collection. That would actually be really cool to see as well. If you've got some awesome collection or some rare thing, like, I mean, I know it isn't super rare what you were talking about, Matt, the album version that you have of, what did you say earlier? War in a,
Boy, the cardboard.
And stuff like that. And we'll link to the, you know, if you throw an Instagram picture up or tweet it or whatever, and we'll link to that as well so folks can see it, just to see what other collectibles stuff is out there. Make sure that you have your location turned off so people don't go try and steal it from your house after for the shares. And any YouTube things you want to see, you do experience, whatever that might be. It might be as simple as wanting to see them in concert. Maybe you've never seen them live. And that would be like the big thing on your list, which certainly if you're a fan, obviously would probably be one of those things, but we'd love to hear about it. I think that's it for this episode. And you can find this show if you want, previous episodes. If you're wanting, if this is your first episode, welcome to the show. And you can listen to previous episodes at goodstuff.fm/atu2. And the Twitter account to follow for the show and for the website, in case you're not aware, this podcast is affiliated with atu2.com. So twitter.com/atu2 is where you can follow everything, all of us, theoretically, I guess, on Twitter. And facebook.com/atu2com is where you can go to like the site on Facebook. Anything else I'm forgetting, Matt, before we wrap up?
No, that's it. I think that's it. And I'm looking forward to we're doing Bucket List next week. And then the week after that, we're going to try to do a very special. That's the week that we turn 20 years old as a website. So the week after that, we're going to try and do a special 20th anniversary, something cool kind of podcast.
So I have
no idea what that means.
given the history, I would assume Edge and Adam are probably going to show up on the podcast, I would assume. Just admit.
I'll find you some sound bites just in case they're busy at 3:30 Dublin time.
You know, I'm the fly, man. That's it.
Maybe Bono too. We'll see. Don't even think that I'm remotely serious. Although if they do want to come on, they're more than welcome.
Yeah, we'll make room for it.
Yeah, I'll sub out.
No, you need to record things.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll just be nervously laughing the whole time. And I'll play back audio clips of themselves to them, and
it'll be like awkward. Chris Farley on SNL when he used to interview Paul.
Do you remember Edge when you
remember that time? That was cool.
I've danced it all again.
And that'll be Larry's response the whole time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Like we said couple times through the show, we record this live. You can listen to the whole Gong Show live if you want. Wednesday nights, goodstuff.fm/, I think it's schedule or calendar, one of the two. I should know. It's my own site. Is where you can see the calendar and the time zone that it happens to fall in on your side of the world. And twitter.com is where you can send in hashtag AskAtU2 questions, thoughts, comments for the show. And that's it. Sherry, where can folks find you if they want to ask you more questions outside of the show on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at U2com Sherry.
And Matt, how about you?
At iChris.
And I'm at Matt McGee. No.
I'm at Matt McGee, and you're at iChris. So we'll get that straight.
Yeah, one of these times. Okay. Right. Okay.
And Chris, before we close out, I have a quote from Adam from the Elevation Tour book. It says, "When I look at the balance of the relationships in the band, it looks like that. In the songwriting partnership of Bono and Edge, I feel Edge is the man and Bono is the woman. And in the rhythm section, Larry is without doubt the man. He wouldn't have it any other way, and neither would I. And I think I have to agree with Mr. Clayton on that."
All right. Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.